We're looking into race and identity after the story of a woman with a white background was discovered passing herself off as black.
And a lesson from post-apartheid history, the story of South Africa's first legal interracial marriage.
It was very, very hostile because at that time the Group Areas Act was intact, so Suzanne and myself could not go into any restaurant.
And we'll be meeting the woman who builds playgrounds in Palestine.
First, though, take a listen to this.
Let me just ask you the question in simple terms again, because you've sent mixed signals over the years. Are you an African-American woman?
I identify as black.
So that's cleared that one up then. That was Rachel Dolezal, former chapter head of the Spokane National Association for the Advancement of Coloured People, talking to NBC after her parents outed her as actually being biologically white. The public backlash against Dolezal's perceived deception has been intense, with critics accusing her of appropriating a burden to which she has no claim.
That burden, the burden of racism, is one which sits particularly heavily over the US this week.
Michelle and I know several members of Emmanuel AME Church. We knew their pastor, Reverend Clementa Pinckney, who, along with eight others, gathered in prayer and fellowship and was murdered last night. And to say our thoughts and prayers are with them and their families and their community doesn't say enough to convey the heartache and the sadness and the anger that we feel.
A visibly moved President Obama there responding to the shooting of members of a black congregation in Charleston on Wednesday. The Charleston shooting is being treated as a hate crime, yet another proof that, whether we like it or not, we are far from living in a world in which race no longer matters.
To talk to us about race, colour and the politics of belonging, we were joined on the line by Bliss Broyard, a New York-based writer whose second book, One Drop, tells the story of her own father, a black man who passed as white.
Well, my father was born in 1920 in Louisiana. And at that time, many of the southern states had Jim Crow laws, laws to segregate people, where you couldn't marry a person of another race, or you couldn't use a particular pool, or hold a certain job, or vote. But of course, in order to segregate people, you have to first classify them. You can't separate people if you don't know who belongs in which group. And so many southern states had laws on the books, usually in there what they called the anti-miscegenation laws, the laws preventing intermarriage, that defined what degree of black ancestry a person had to have in order to be black. And it varied from state to state. In Louisiana, it was any traceable ancestor made you black, so the one drop rule, as they called it.
Which made your father black in the eyes of
Yes.
the state of Louisiana?
For my father, He was born black in the eyes of the state in Louisiana, and he belonged to a community called the Creoles, who are descended from the free people of color. So he had been culturally colored, kind of in between black and white, for a few generations. But in fact, his great-grandfather passed as a black man or as a free man of color in 1855. That was the first incident of passing that I found when I started researching my father's family. So Rachel Dolezal, you know, there are other cases of people who passed from white to black, my great-great-grandfather being one of them. And that was in 1855 when a black person and a white person couldn't get married, and so he just declared himself to be a free man of color, and he went to a church where he wasn't known, so nobody objected to the marriage and started living as a man of color to marry his wife.
But you yourself actually grew up believing yourself to be biologically white, because the things you've just told us about your father, you didn't find out until he was on his deathbed. Is that right?
That's correct. So I grew up in a very kind of WASPy area of Connecticut, which is in New England, and there were hardly a black person in town, and I certainly didn't have any black classmates or any black friends. When I found out, when my father was dying, that he had had this secret from me for all of his life, which was that he was, as in my mother's words, part black. He was a Creole from New Orleans. And that explained a lot. Like, I never knew my father's family growing up. Although they only lived an hour away in New York City, I never saw my grandmother, my aunts, my cousin. And that's because they all chose to stay living as black. And some of them even looked physically black, so they didn't have the option to pass. And I only met my father's family at his memorial service.
And what did this sort of belated revelation do to your sense of identity, your sense of who you are in the world?
My first reaction was like, oh, wow, you know, I'm part of the American melting pot. How cool. And it didn't seem like such a big deal. But as I got to know my father's family, as I learned about the history of segregation in the United States, the consequences of which, you know, sort of in a way forced my father and many people like him to pass in order to find paying work and to survive, this secret took on more and more importance, and it started to change the way that I thought of myself, partly because I didn't want to follow in my father's footsteps and sort of keep this secret and all the shame surrounding that. I didn't imagine any other choice but being public with it, and especially because I'm a writer, it seemed like this was an opportunity to explore these questions of how race has been identified historically. So it has changed my sense of myself.
Did you find it harder to identify yourself with the Black community, given that you didn't grow up thinking that you were any part of that community?
Certainly. I was very lucky that I had a number of friends and, you know, met family members who were very kind and understanding, and, you know, they allowed me to sort of ask all of the dumb questions that white people have, or people who have grown up white, about the history of race in America. But I found, I was surprised when my book came out, I did sort of steel myself for some African-Americans, you know, saying that I had no claim to the experience, which I'm not claiming that I'm Black, but I'm claiming that this ancestry has something to do with my life, and I feel connected to it. But in fact, I think a lot of people realize that, you know, I had a choice. So the fact that I did embrace it, and in a public way, I think made the Black community quite welcoming to me.
Which is an interesting contrast, of course, to what's going on at the moment with Rachel Dolezal, who's been criticised for claiming a burden which she didn't have to carry, I think, in the words of some of the online backlash. What's your take on the differences between your two scenarios? Because, of course, they are very different.
They are different. I mean, I think one of the things, and this is, I think, problematic in my view, that makes me acceptable as a mixed-race person and Rachel Dolezal not, is because I do have the biology, I do have the one drop, I have the ancestry. So despite the fact that I didn't grow up identifying this way, and, you know, on the face of it, I live less of a Black experience than certainly than Rachel Dolezal. My husband's white. My children don't look physically Black, although they know that they're mixed race and we see our Black family. You know, she has lived a far Blacker experience in many ways. But, you know, I didn't have to invent a biography. I didn't change my appearance. And so I think it's the deception that's so difficult for people.